Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who always looks ahead, even when parallel parking, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome back. We are renaming ourselves because it is National Name Yourself Day. I've decided not to go with Beauregard or Slats. I'm still deciding, but we've had some good ones so far. Coming up at 8:30, Don Rosen from WRJN. He's the morning host here at Civic Media at WRJN. He and I are going to talk celebrity encounters. That will be fun. And we'll also talk to, I'm sure we'll talk to Don about Seinfeld again because they went to grade school together. But he's always fun to talk to. Coming up in about 9 seconds, once I introduce him, is a guy I'm excited to have back on the show. It's my pleasure to welcome from onmilwaukee.com, Matt Miller. Hey, Matt. Conrad, do we have Matt?
I thought we did. I'm going to call him right back.
Oh, yeah. Call him back. So this Thursday, we've been talking a lot about the Wisconsin Film Festival that took place last weekend. It goes till this Thursday. And you can still, if you're in the Madison area, I know they have tickets left. Alexander Payne will be making an appearance on Thursday night on the closing night to show, to screen his film Sideways for the 20th anniversary. And he's doing a Q&A afterwards. He's Oscar nominated and he's an Oscar winner. He won for, I think, Sideways, and he was nominated this year for The Holdovers. So that'll be fun. Pardon me. We also have another great film festival in this state, the Milwaukee Film Festival. And that's what we're trying to get a hold of Matt to discuss. It is the 16th annual Milwaukee Film Festival, and it starts Thursday. And the Milwaukee Film Festival runs for like 2 weeks. So you have time to see stuff, and they just pick great films there too. They have great venues. I highly recommend it if you can get down there. Aunt Carla, we have to have some Game of Thrones talk. I know we have Game of Thrones fans out there, and I think there were a few that were late to the party like I was. But I almost feel like it's one of those shows I want to go back and watch again, because the first time I saw it, I wasn't really 100% sure of what I was watching. It's got, like, it's just a crazy storylines. It's very violent. There is a ton of sex in it. And it's just kind of a spectacle, the whole show. So if you have not watched Game of Thrones, I do recommend it. It's very well written. It's a great show. And we were talking earlier, there's only been one spinoff from Game of Thrones that has actually made it to the screen. So they're pitching stuff all the time. But the only one that's made it so far is House of the Dragon. So, but we should dedicate, Conrad, we should really do a segment or two about Game of Thrones, just Game of Thrones. And not yes. Just try to pawn it off on a question. So, okay, so we've got Matt. He's a guy who I'm sure does not want to change his name because he's got a good name. It flows. Don't you think so, Conrad? Matt Miller.
Yes, it definitely does.
Easy to
does.
Say, the alliteration. I yeah. love it. He joins us now in Nightlight. Hey, Matt.
I would just need to spell it a little differently, you know, get the M-I-L-L instead of the M-U-E that throws everyone off and has them doing Ferris Bueller impressions.
I think you're doing okay, regardless of spelling. It's easy to say. How you been, Matt?
I've been great, and I'm doing great because the Milwaukee Film Festival is coming up this weekend, so it's Christmas again for me.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us, what are your plans regarding the festival? Are you there every day? What are you looking forward to? Give us an overview, if you would.
I'm pretty much there every single day at one of the four locations, normally probably a few of those locations, at the Oriental, Downer, Times, and the Avalon. And yes, you heard that right, the Downer,
yeah.
Which is going to open again for the Milwaukee Film Festival. We love to see that. Hopefully people show up, and hopefully people continue to show up afterwards to the festival too and support that theater.
It's a great venue, and is there any... I don't know. I mean, the Oriental is kind of like the crown jewel, right? In the biggest venue?
Yes. That's the home base. That's the three screens. Yeah, for sure.
So what do you have? What are you looking most forward to seeing there this year, Matt? I know it goes on for 2 weeks, which I think is cool. You can kind of take a breath. So many film festivals are packed into 4 days or a week, but Milwaukee kind of takes its time with it 2 weeks. And I like that.
Yeah, it's nicely spread out, and there's a bunch of great stuff. I always tell people, you know, as long as you have an interest in something, there's something at the Milwaukee Film Festival for you to be interested in. So there's a Gene Wilder documentary that I think is going to be really good.
Oh, love
obviously
it.
There's a lot of material there to work with. There's two recent Oscar nominees as well, with Io Capitano, as well as Robot Dreams, which is their closing night movie. It's an animated movie about a lonely dog who buys a robot to be his friend, which looks extremely charming.
Oh,
I
great.
Have a feeling it might make me cry, too. I'm very excited about that one.
Nice.
They've got a bunch of really great stuff. There's an independent French movie called The Beast that is supposed to be terrific that I'm very excited to check out. And then, you know, they've got horror movies as well. They've got really weird genre movies. Those are always fun to check out late night. So, again, if you're a kid, if you're a kid at heart, if you love horror movies, if you love, you know, international dramas, they've got pretty much something for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. And Matt, have you been to a lot of the film festivals, be it nationwide or just in Wisconsin? And if so, how does Milwaukee compare to the other festivals? Does it have its own identity? How would you describe that?
Yeah, so I've been to the Sundance Film Festival about a decade ago. And Milwaukee is very different because Milwaukee Film Festival really is about serving the Milwaukee community. It is about bringing in movies to this market that otherwise wouldn't come here. You know, there was some hope, there was some talk about, ooh, could this festival become the next Sundance, the next Toronto,
oh, wow.
Something like that. And that's not really what we're going to be. We're never going to be a premiere festival where we're premiering big new movies, where the next big Oscar run starts at the Milwaukee Film Festival. And we don't need the Milwaukee Film Festival to do that. We need them to bring in the kinds of movies like La Camera, like The Beast, like Do Not Expect Much from The End of the World that otherwise Milwaukee would never get.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just at the Wisconsin Film Festival for about 5 days. And they have Alexander Payne coming on Thursday to close it out and show Sideways on its 20th anniversary.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, isn't that cool? I wish I could have been there for it. Does Milwaukee have anybody coming to the festival over the next 2 weeks that you're looking forward to, a personal appearance by a filmmaker?
Yeah, they bring in tons of filmmakers, tons of producers. I believe for all of the opening, closing, and centerpiece, they're going to have at least some members of the cast and crew and like the directors and the kind of creatives behind those. So it's going to be really cool. Obviously not a Alexander Payne, which is an incredible get for the Wisconsin Film Festival, but
yeah,
you're going to see some people who really made these things come to life on screen.
That's the best to me, Matt. And I'm sure you'd agree that that is the best part about film festivals is just that interaction you get at the Q&As after and meeting the filmmakers and learning about their process, whether it's directors of short films or an Alexander Payne. They're just so much fun to listen to and something you don't get just going to a regular movie in a cinema.
Yeah, and it's a respect for making these movies. You know, that's always a big thing that I think sometimes I think people can lose sight of. You know, we kind of take movies for granted and TV shows for that matter, but it's like a lot of work goes into making a movie, much less a good movie. It takes a ton of work to make a terrible movie,
yeah,
too.
Right.
So the film festival, you know, being able to hear these people talk about this process and bring that process to life and for movies that, again, you otherwise wouldn't get a chance to see, it's really something special. And I will say this year's film festival does have a lot of very particular cinematic experiences. They have a 3D screening of the new Wim Wenders movie called Anselm, which is a documentary about a kind of experimental artist. That is something you will never be able to see probably in that format like this ever again. They've got The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, a classic black and white movie from over, I think, practically a century ago that still looks incredible. And they're going to have a live orchestra playing with that. So those are really cool experiences.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's so funny you say that, like with like even the bad movie. And I mean, ideally, film festivals don't book any bad movies, but there are going to be some that aren't popular. And when I would introduce them in Wisconsin, I'd say, please don't give a one. These people worked really hard. Even if you don't like it, give it a two. It's not going to kill you. What do you think, Matt, about Milwaukee in general or Wisconsin? Do you think we have a healthy independent film community here? It seems like it's kind of thriving to me. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to double back and say I always want people to see something they're not that they don't know anything about at the film festival, that they're going in kind of blind. Because I think it's always fun to find a discovery like that. The best movie I saw all of last year was a movie I kind of just made time for during the film festival. It was just like, I don't know, I've got a few hours. I'll go see this movie, Rice Boy Sleeps. And it ended up being the best movie I saw last year that utterly emotionally wrecked me. It was beautiful.
Oh, wow.
And those are, you know, no matter what you see at a film festival, you're going to walk out with an opinion, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to walk out either loving it or walking out being like, oh my gosh, what did I just see? But you will always walk out with a memory. You're not going to walk out being like, well, that was Ghostbusters 3, you know?
Yeah, right. That is very well stated.
To go to your question, I think Movie Wisconsin is a really thriving independent scene, especially considering the market, considering, you know, where we live in the kind of shadow of Chicago. I think we're doing a lot with what we have. And I know there's some talk about bringing, you know, production credits back, bringing film credits back to Wisconsin. I think that would really obviously help to bring some of those shoots to the state as opposed to them going to Chicago or Detroit or Atlanta or
Minnesota,
Toronto.
Yeah.
But they're doing a lot of really good stuff.
I agree. I would love for, we've talked about that quite a bit on this show, and I hope they bring the incentives here. I know some people, primarily in Milwaukee, are working really hard to do that. Matt, do you have, I want to ask you what you're watching, but first I want to ask you if you saw Poor Things.
I did. I saw that around Oscar time.
Right.
I was a fan. It's a very strange movie. It's wild that, you know, Yorgos Lanthimos, such a strange, idiosyncratic, uncomfortable, macabre director, has become an Oscar favorite. But yeah, it's wild that he has. And it's such a wonderful movie to look at. It won production design, I believe, at the Oscars, and deservedly so, because it is every single set, every single costume is a feast to look at.
It's so weird and fun. And I know you don't have a lot of time tonight, before we let you go, I want to ask you, and I'll do that next, what you thought of Mark Ruffalo's performance in that, because I just thought he was so great. And as usual, Matt, I'm going to ask you what you're watching, see if you can give us a recommendation. That's coming up with Matt Miller next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. Ask Matt about the indie film situation here in Wisconsin. I see someone is filming right outside the window here, some type of independent film or some type of independent something. Matt Miller is my guest from On Milwaukee. He is the entertainment reporter there and covers a whole bunch of stuff and does great work. Matt, well, I loved Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. I just thought I wanted him to win so bad. And I know he's from Wisconsin and that's great, but did you love his performance in that?
I did. And I know that was a very divisive performance because it's very big. It's very broadly comedic. He's making big choices. I love those choices. I think it's such a funny, it's very kind of Kevin Kline in A Fish Called Wanda, just kind of going big ridiculous. And I love that. You know, it is wild that one of the biggest Oscar movies of the year was basically a sex comedy.
Right.
And I think and Mark Ruffalo kind of gets a reputation as, you know, kind of, you know, this very, you know, overly serious actor. And it was nice to see him be like, I can be really loose and funny as well. And especially in a Yorgos movie where people's performances can be very intentionally stiff or intentionally kind of almost inhuman. I love how bouncy and weird his performance is. I really enjoyed him in that. And I think Willem Dafoe is also great in that, playing a character, weirdly a heartfelt character, despite being the monster of the movie. I'm kind of surprised that they went with the more comedic Ruffalo over the oddly more emotional Defoe character in that film, but it's a strange movie, and of course they went with the strangest possible supporting actor pick.
They did, and it's a great comp with the fish called Wanda. I love it. It was just so funny to me how he was so frustrated by, like, so frustrated by her. Did you see Roadhouse, Matt?
Both the new and the old, and I did not. Watching the original Roadhouse and, like, watching the new Roadhouse is like having a favorite dive bar and then going to the bar again, and, like, they totally remodeled it and it now looks like an IKEA or like an Apple store. Like, that's the vibe between the two movies. The original is so uniquely sexy and brutal and scuzzy and so perfect and entertaining and perfectly shot. And it has such a texture to it. And then you see the new one and it doesn't know if it wants to be serious or silly. And it's all CGI now. And it just does not, it doesn't have the sex appeal to it anymore. Right. Like it bummed me out watching that new Roadhouse.
It didn't have the sex appeal despite the exotic location. And none of the characters were likable to me. Like, and I don't have to like a character as long as there's someone interesting, but I don't know. It just didn't land for me. So.
Yeah. And like, again, you have in the original movie, you know, Patrick Swayze is so handsome and such a fascinating character. Yeah. And like, there is like, you know, that movie just loves him and his body, and that movie is into like the sexual chemistry between the two leads, and even between Patrick Swayze and Sam Elliott. And then you see this one, and it's just devoid of any of that energy, any of that chemistry. And they try to have, I guess, like a romance in the movie, but it utterly and completely does not register. And again, I think part of that is the movie doesn't know if it wants to be a serious movie about like a violent, damaged man, or if it wants to be a silly kind of Roadhouse movie. And the result is a waste of your time.
Yeah, I agree. It could have used a Sam Elliott type character, which it didn't have.
It really needed a Sam Elliott, which, my gosh, Sam Elliott in the original Roadhouse. I mean,
best thing maybe about the, it.
Maybe the handsomest, coolest man who's ever existed.
Matt, what can you recommend? What are you watching?
So we've been watching a lot of Top Chef, especially with the Wisconsin season.
Oh, you were into that last time. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, now we've been watching the new season. It's been pretty good so far. I'm waiting for the drama to kick in. I'm waiting for, you know, some of the spice to get thrown in, some of the flavor, especially this last episode where, you know, they had this cheese challenge, but then everyone decided to make croquettes, which felt very, as television goes, it was very repetitive. Okay. But you know, I'm excited. I'm happy to see Dan Jacobs is representing well so far. He's not only sticking around, but kind of floating near the top of the croup. So, I've been really enjoying that. And I always like to go back and rewatch 30 Rock. That's always a great one.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great TV show.
Love it.
And I'm hoping to dabble. I'm very intrigued by this kind of game reality show called The Traitors. And I don't know if you've been watching or hearing about that.
I've heard of it. I have not seen it yet, though.
Yeah, I want to start with the British one because everyone seems to really like the British one a lot. It's basically kind of like The Mole a little bit. If you remember the old ABC game show, The Mole, where it, or if you played Mafia or in school, where you know there's people who are traitors in this group, and people have to figure out who's a traitor and who's a good guy. It seems like a kind of fun kind of game show premise because we are in this awkward phase right now of, you know, the strike aftermath where there's just not a lot of scripted stuff out there. So that's why you're seeing a lot of reality shows, a lot of game shows on TV because they're still playing catch up.
I can't believe we're seeing as much stuff as we are, actually. Some of these shows, I feel like they were secretly shooting because it's like FBI, all the Dick Wolf shows are on somehow. They must have gotten so much stuff in the can before the strike even happened.
Yeah, or they had a bunch of stuff in the can already,
and
now they're hopping back on shoot, which I think might have been the original case. A lot of those shows, like a lot of those FBI, and those churn out fast. You know, that's why those shows are some of the rare shows that still have long TV seasons, is because they're able to crank those out so fast and so efficiently.
Well said, buddy. Listen, have a great time at the Milwaukee Film Festival. It's been so, anytime I've been there, I've just loved it. It's such a great event. I encourage people to go, and maybe we'll check in with you after. We'd love to hear what you thought of it, but I appreciate you taking time out. I know you're swamped, and yeah, have a great night.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I will say the Oriental tends to keep a bunch of those movies after the film festival. So if you missed out on one, keep an eye on the Oriental and Downer. They might be bringing some of them back if they're really loved or if they're a popular choice. So keep an eye out. Go to the movies.
Yeah, go. There you go. I love it. All right. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Anytime. All right. That's Matt Miller from On Milwaukee. Check out the Milwaukee Film Festival. It's a great festival. We are blessed here in Wisconsin. We've had people from the Green Bay Festival on the show. They have an event coming up, don't they, Conrad? Did we miss it? We got to have those guys back on.
Yeah.
Nick and Caitlin, yeah. So check out the Milwaukee Film Festival if you're around. And they have beautiful theaters, too. That Downer Theater, that's so cool they're using that again. The Oriental Theater. Did you go, when you were at UWM, did you go to the
I did Oriental? Not, and I should have. I definitely should have.
You've never been to the Oriental?
Yeah, I don't think I have.
Oh, it's a great theater. So, do we have time for a clip? We're gonna bring Don in, but I don't wanna.
We only have about a minute.
What the heck are we supposed to talk about for a minute?
Well, I can tell you who I changed my name to.
I don't even get out of bed for a minute. Okay, what'd you change your name to?
In honor of my favorite Brewer baseball player, I'll change my name to Prince.
Prince Fielder.
Prince Krieger.
Oh, well, right. But I mean, was it Prince Fielder?
It was, yeah.
Oh, nice. So you're a little tyke. You remember him, though.
Yeah, of course. He was definitely my favorite player growing
baseball
up.
Baseball names. All right, that's what we're going to go. Before the end of the show, I will have a new baseball. I will have a new name. All right. Don Rosen, I'm very excited. He is coming up next. We're going to talk celebrities. He's had some fun experiences, and he is Seinfeld's best friend. How do you like that, Don? This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. By design, I wonder what I would find if I met you. Let my eyes caress you until I meet the thought of Mrs. Princess, who often wonder what makes her work. I guess I'll leave that question to the experts, assuming that there are some out there, but probably alone, solitaire.
Did you miss what's hot from Wisconsin to Hollywood? Listen to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba podcast on civicmedia.us. You can always listen through Spotify, Apple Podcast, or the Civic Media app. Take Nightlight with Pete Schwabba anywhere you go. Once again, here is your host, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back to Nightlight. We are broadcasting live from downtown Green Bay, statewide, from beautiful City Deck Landing here at WGBW. Tomorrow night on the show, Milwaukee Film CEO Ann Reed will join me, as well as, who else do we have, Conrad, tomorrow? We got a great show tomorrow night,
too. Yeah, we got Elton.
An Elton John tribute artist is going to be with us, and we've got some of his music. So that's going to be a really fun show. Friday night, Rob Thomas and Terry Barr join us. Right now, I'm very excited. I don't want to waste another second, because this guy and I have become fast friends. He's the WRJN morning show host in Racine here on Civic Media. And he is, he's like a radio pro. He's been around for a long time, even though he's still in his late 20s. And he's got a great voice. And I love listening to Don talk. And I love listening to his show. So check it out if you're in Racine on WRJN every morning. Don, how are you?
Fine. When you said you were excited for a moment, I said, I thought I was next. Wait a second.
That is such an old school radio humble thing to say. You know your tops, buddy. So how are you?
You know, I'm very good. I'm fine, thank you. You know, we had a meeting today amongst all the announcers at Civic Media, and they wanted our biographies. And I found, not too long ago, I found my biography I wrote in the first grade.
Oh, nice.
And it's the most embarrassing thing you ever want to read. It starts off, I remember when I was born, the doctor picked me up and slapped me. Oh, man, I'm reading this thing. This teacher must have thought I was some kind of lunatic handing this thing in. But I told my daughter, when I go, I'm leaving you this biography. You can do what you want with it, but it's a family heirloom. I should hand that biography in.
You should submit it and see what happens. I know. I was just going to say that would be pretty cool. Hey, you have a cool thing happening Thursday, Don. You have a great guest. Can you tell us about that?
Is that the mayor?
No, it's the emergency. Don't you have like the?
Oh no, that's on Friday. Okay. Yeah, the tornado awareness thing is this is Tornado Awareness Week, but on Friday, Dave Mack, a friend of mine for many years, he was the head of emergency management in Wisconsin for many years. He's been everything. And he was also the 4th District Alderman for the city of Racine. He retired and said, I'm going to go into teaching in my retirement. And he decided, nah, I'm going to run for election again. And he ran. He just won again.
Oh, wow.
He's also the head of the 4th Fest Committee, which does the 4th of July parade, the biggest parade in the Midwest. He's in charge of that. This guy is everything. Where I go home at night and I want to sleep, he's out doing stuff.
Jeez.
And, yeah, so he was the head of emergency management for the longest time. And so we always had him on the air because we did have a tornado in Racine once. Ripped apart the front of Menards. And
oh, wow.
In Racine, also ripped apart part of the Case Factory on Highway 11.
When was that?
When was that?
Yeah.
I can't tell you the year. I remember the morning it happened because I was at the radio station and I looked out the back door and the sky was black.
Huh.
And I, you know, we have a basement in the station that was built for tornadoes. The ceiling is spancrete. It's about 6 feet deep in concrete.
Jeez.
So nothing gets through there. But, you know, we were on the air.
Oh, nice.
I did come close to a tornado once. We were on a road trip. And we were going through Nebraska, and the skies looked kind of funny. My wife turned on the radio, and sure enough, there was a tornado warning. They said, if you get to mile marker, whatever it was, I think it was 96 on the freeway, quit. Don't go any further. We're like mile number 94. And the tornado was crossing the freeway. We pulled in. Our hotel was about another 15 miles away, but she said, well, pull over. I said, pull over where? There's nowhere to pull over in Nebraska. Pull over where? So there was an exit ramp, and sure enough, there was a hotel. So we went over there, and we said, we're going to stay here for the night. But there was a nearby town. It got ripped to shreds. The whole town was wiped out by the tornado. That's about as close as I ever got to one. I never saw one.
You know what? I saw my son and I were in Madison years ago. He was like in eighth grade. We were staying at this hotel downtown, and people called everybody to the lobby because of weather and presumably a tornado. So we went down to the lobby. Not everybody went, but we did, just playing it safe. I probably wouldn't have if I didn't have my, you know, 14-year-old son with me, but we could see out the windows, Don, whirling dervishes like in the air. They had no place to land. Because it was so populated with, you know, architecture and buildings, I've never seen anything like that before. Like, if we were in Kansas or in some rural area, they would have touched down. It was incredible.
Well, we belong to the Route 66 Association of Illinois, and we're coming back from one of the Route 66 functions. Now, normally my wife didn't drive on road trips. I did. She wanted to drive this time. And we're on the freeway heading back toward Wisconsin. And again, the skies turned black. The rain started, and it was pouring. You couldn't see in front of you. And we turned on the radio. Sure enough, they said there's a tornado. I forget the name of the town. It was Bloomington, Illinois. Bloomington,
okay.
Illinois. And we're coming back, and I look outside, and you could see the funnels above us.
Oh, man.
They weren't touching down, but you could see the clouds swirling around. And she was panicking. I was panicking. And I said, listen, just follow the truck in front of you. You couldn't see anything because the rains were in sheets. I said, just follow his lights. Wherever he goes, just follow those lights because you couldn't see the road. And he pulled off, and we went to this parking lot, and we had this radio station on. And on a Sunday, they actually had a live announcer in there walking everybody through this tornado that was going through Bloomington, Illinois. And finally, about 15 minutes later, it all cleared. Everything was gone. And we're pulling out, and I said, wait a second. The radio station's on the other side of the road. It's right there. It was literally walking distance from where we were, but you couldn't see it. But I did call the general manager the next day, and I thanked them for having a live human being on the air on that Sunday.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, check out Don's show Friday morning, because that's a great guest. I mean, just the stories he must have are incredible. But let's segue, Don, because I know you I mean, you've had such a cool, long career. You've interacted with so many people. And I know you've met tons of celebrities. And celebrities are fun to talk about, whether we're trashing them or celebrating them. Celebrity, celebrate, get it? So let's talk. We talked a little bit about this on your show.
Well, I'm going to tell you who my most favorite celebrity interview was. And I'll be honest, I'm a little up there in age. This August 2nd, about 52nd year in radio, 52 continuous years in this business. And I've run into a bunch of people. There was a woman you've never heard of before. Her name was Kitty Hart Moxon. Kitty Hart Moxon. I was watching 2020 on ABC, and she was on. And she was with Diane Sawyer. As a teenager, she was in 5 concentration camps during World War II.
Oh, my gosh.
And she went through them all. She went through Bergen-Belsen, Treblinka. She was in Auschwitz-Birkenau. You name it, she was there. And her mother was a nurse. And her mother was treated a little special because she was a nurse. And when these prisoners needed care, they called in her mother. And her mother was privy to information. So she knew when the exterminations were coming. Jeez. And she went into the dormitory, the area where she was, the teenagers were, and she grabbed her daughter out one day. She said, come. That building was going through extermination in the morning. They were going to gas everybody. And she said, let me get my friends out. She goes, you cannot get your friends out. We've got to go, us. Because if you wake anybody up, they're going to get everybody and they'll get us. And this went on from camp to camp. She described as a 14-year-old, she was working outside the chamber, the gas chamber, and she could hear the screaming. And the guard said to her, keep working or you're going in next. And this went on and on for the entire duration of the war. And I'll shorten the story. She was being sent to another camp, and they put her in a boxcar with about 200 other people. There was no room to breathe. So she would find a little hole in the wood on the boxcar and put her nose up to it to breathe. The stench in there was awful. She was in there for days, and eventually they would stack the bodies so she could climb on top of them and get to the air in the holes in the boxcar that were higher. And that went on and on. Finally, the boxcar, the train stopped, and it sat there for a day. And the stench and the dead bodies. And finally, the doors opened with the Americans.
Oh, wow.
But she told me this story. Now, when we did the interview, it was at a Janesville radio station I worked at. I told the owner, she lives in England. I'm going to get her on, but you can't run any commercials during this. I can't interrupt this woman telling this story.
Right.
I'm going to let her tell the story, and we can't have interruptions. It's going to be a very expensive phone call. And he said, do it. And I'm telling you, in 52 years, I've never interviewed anybody like this woman who was able to tell me this story. I mean, you can't believe what she was saying. She told Diane Sawyer. Diane Sawyer was in one of the camps with her. And she goes, well, why can't I step through there? She goes, that's the graveyard. Those are where the ashes were buried. And there's a pool of water on it now. But this whole camp is a cemetery.
My goodness.
And it's hard to walk in here because you're walking in ashes. It's still the ashes and the bones were still there all these years later. But anyway, I spoke to her. And all the other celebrities I spoke to over the years kind of melted away. And I'll never have an interview like that again.
How long did you talk to her, Don? How long did your interview go on with her?
1 hour.
Nice.
With no interruptions. It was on a Sunday morning. I started at the top of the hour, and I went to the top of the next hour. And I just let her talk. I guided her a little bit through there, but I just let her talk.
How old? England. Sorry, Don. Dad, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask, how old was she when you interviewed her?
Well, she was about 13, 14 years old, 16 years old, I guess, during the war. That was in 1944. And I interviewed her about, 7, 8 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Do the math on it. I mean, she got married. She had a family. She never saw her mother again. Once she went on the boxcar, they were separated. That was the end of that.
Yeah.
But she owed it to her mother, who kept saving her life from camp to camp to camp. Because her mother would hear stuff. And she'd, come on, let's go. Get out of this room now.
And you know, there have been so many stories I've heard from that era, from people, from Jewish friends of mine, that they all could be movies. I mean, when I was living in L.A., I worked, when we first moved there, I worked in this apartment building. I was doing colleges. I was doing stand-up. I hated the road. And this night security job opened up in my building. You know, security is a loose term. He just wanted someone to sit down in the office all night. So my writing partner would come over, and we would write till 4 a.m. We had a lot of success. We sold some movies, and all from this little gig. Well, there was this old Jewish guy in the building who would come in and talk to us. And he showed us his numbers from the concentration camp. He told us his story about how he avoided a horrible camp that his sister went to. His whole family was killed. But he broke his arm and had to go to the hospital, and that's what saved his life. And every time he would see us, he would say, I never complain. He had this sweet old disposition, white hair. He looked like a character out of a movie. Well, here's the Seinfeld aspect, or the Larry David aspect. He was getting on in years, and he would tell the same story over and over. Now, what do you do, Don? The story's incredible, but we've heard it a gazillion times, and we're trying to finish our screenplay. We're in this horrible position, but it was a fascinating story.
I know.
Fascinating.
Well, that's what I told the owner of the radio station. I said, I can't interrupt her for commercials. It wouldn't be right. I mean, she's talking about something that the world had never seen before.
Yeah.
You know, if all these young punks who claim to be Nazis today, those January 6th Nazis, if they were to see what it was really like, they ought to speak to somebody like Kitty Hart Motson. They wouldn't be playing Nazi anymore with their little swastikas and pretending they're heroes.
That's incredible.
They could talk to somebody like this who went through it over and over and over and over.
Oh, man. All right. We've got more with Don Rosen coming up. And I'm going to ask him. I sent Don two videos. I'm going to ask him if you watch them. That's coming up next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. Bridget from the 818 says, I would change my name to things I like. So sunshine, sugar, or Chardonnay would be great names for me. That's my favorite text all night. Thank you, Bridget. That would put a button on our name discussion. I'm talking with a guest right now who has a great name, who pretty much guarantees he was going into show business in some capacity. He chose radio, Don Rosen from WRJN in Racine. Don, I kind of cut you off. As you know, we have pretty hard breaks here at Civic Media. But
yeah, I know.
Finish your story or your thought there.
Well, I was going to tell you, I had a whole bunch of things I wanted to mention because I don't get a chance to mention them in the morning when I do it. I come from a town called Massapequa. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, I have. I have a friend that lives there, actually, Dave Patterson.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, I do.
Well, it's got some, recently it's been in the news. Because here's a small town, Massapequa. Most people can't even spell it yet pronounce it.
Yeah.
And we had a serial killer come from Massapequa.
What?
He's been in the news. He was the Gilgo Beach Killer. Now, it's been on Dateline. It's been on 2020. And this guy killed many women at Gilgo Beach in that area. And he was an architect in Manhattan. And they just found caught him, I think earlier this year, late last year. They just got him. And when I used to walk to school, now he's a little younger than I was, and I used to walk past his house every day going to middle school. So they showed on 2020, they showed a picture of him in high school, and son of a gun, there was one of my teachers he was standing next to in high school.
Gosh.
Now the other killer, or not killer, but almost killer we had was Amy Fisher from Massapequa.
Oh, yeah.
She shot Mary Jo Buttafuoco. That was not far from my house either. So that took place there. Then, living about a five-minute distance from my house was Carlo Gambino, the head of the Gambino crime family, who the Godfather was modeled after. He's in Massapequa. He died in Massapequa, too, of old age. So we got that going for us.
It's amazing you turned out as well as you did. I have to be honest.
Yeah, I know. But the next town over is Amityville. Oh, yeah, the Amityville.
Oh my gosh.
And so one morning I'm on the air. I was working overnights back in the early mid 70s. And our chief engineer was also a volunteer fireman for the Amityville Fire Department. He calls me up. It was about 3 or 4 in the morning. And this is when overnight shows were live. And he said, let's go on the air. He had a two-way radio. And he said, let's go on the air. He said, I'm at this house. This guy wiped out his entire family. You can't believe what's going on here. The whole family was murdered.
Oh, my gosh.
And it turns out it was Ronald DeFeo, and that was the Amityville house that morning. So we had the very first story on the air that morning at like 3, 4 in the morning, coming from Ronald DeFeo's house in Amityville, Long Island.
Isn't that something?
That's where I come from.
I didn't know. My friend Dave Patterson lives in Massapequa. He created, or his mom, Catherine Patterson, wrote The Bridge to Terabithia. And he produced, he wrote the screenplay for the film and produced the film. And it's not too far from Queens. It's kind of just in the early part as you drive out on Long Island, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's in Nassau County. It's near the Suffolk County border.
Jeez.
But nothing's too far away from anything there.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, you think I would have seen a lot of movies made. I saw a couple of movies being filmed. But my favorite one, only because it caught me by surprise, I was up at, I don't know if you know how New York City. It's up at Central Park West by Columbus Circle. Are you familiar with that area?
A little bit, yeah. I've been there several times, but...
Yeah, Central Park West up by Columbus Circle. And I'm sitting here on a bench. I'm waiting for somebody. And I see this presidential thing going on there. They had a guy with a banner going across Central Park West. And it said, Palentine for president. And I'm saying, oh, gee, it was 1976. Huh, there must be an election. Palentine. I don't know who he is, but he's running. And I'm sitting there watching, and I realize, oh, they're filming a commercial for him. Huh, they got all these cameras and everything set up here. So I'm watching for a while, then I left. Cut to about 7 months later, I'm sitting watching TV, and they're reviewing a movie, and they showed a clip, and it says Palentine for president. And I said, wait a second, Palentine for president, that sounds familiar. Where did I see that before? It was Taxi Driver with Robert De Niro. And
oh,
they were
wow.
filming the scene where he had the mohawk, and the gun was going to slide down, and he was going to assassinate Palentine in Taxi Driver. And I was sitting there watching. But, you know, De Niro was not a star then. Albert Brooks was not a star. You know, all these people weren't stars at the time. So you don't notice them.
That is so, geez. So what year was that? What year was that, Don?
It was 75.
Okay, 75, yeah.
The end of 75, around coming up to... The election was in 76, so yeah, the end of 75.
Okay.
When they filmed it.
That's hilarious.
But you don't notice that stuff. So my father's in Manhattan. He worked in Manhattan. And traffic there is just hell to begin with. So he looks ahead and he said, oh, and he doesn't know what's going on, but he sees police are pushing traffic in another direction. And there's this giant fake street that's up above the streets with a car in the middle of it facing down. He said, what the? It was Ghostbusters they were filming. It's when the cars were going all over into the street. They built a fake street about 6 feet up. And that's what, you know.
Oh, that's hilarious. So it's almost like in New York, it almost is like people know you're going somewhere. So they have something happen is what it sounds like.
Yeah, but, you know, it's one of those things. You see this stuff all the time, but you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Because they don't hold up a sign. The only other thing I saw was I took my sister-in-law. We were in Manhattan going to a show, a Broadway show. And we come out, and on 43rd Street, they had all these trucks lined up, these big moving vans. And I said to my sister-in-law, they must be filming something here. So I walked up into the truck. There was a guy sitting at a desk inside this moving van. I said, are you filming a movie? He goes, yeah. I said, anybody big in it? He goes, none other than Miss Meryl Streep.
It's pretty
I said,
big.
Meryl Streep's going to be here? He goes, no, we're filming a scene with Anne Hathaway here. Can you guess what the movie was? Anne Hathaway, Meryl Streep.
Oh. If I sat here all night, I could.
The Devil Wears Prada.
Devil Wears Prada.
What they were filming.
That's great.
And it was the scene where there was a big storm, and she is with her father, Anne Hathaway, in Times Square. The whole scene lasted about 3 minutes. They must have had about 6 moving vans full of equipment. To film it.
Hey, Don, this is interesting that you're here on a Tuesday. My friend Dave Patterson, who's from Massapequa, was here on a Tuesday. We ran out of time. I had him back the next Tuesday. My friend Mike Siegel, same thing. Would you come back next Tuesday so we can finish this conversation? We'll do like a little mini series here. Would you do that?
Sure.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time tonight, buddy. Okay. We'll do it again next Tuesday night, folks. We'll finish these stories. Don Rosen from WRGN Morning Show. Check out his interview Friday morning about tornadoes. It's going to be fun. I'd like to thank all my guests tonight. Don Rosen, Matt Miller, and Jason Mansmith. And thanks so much for your text, folks. We got some name stuff going on here tonight. It was a lot of fun. We'll be back tomorrow night with more Nightlight and more Milwaukee Film Fest talk. I'm Pete Schwab. This is Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good night, Wisconsin. I'll take you to your best friend's house, Mama.